Good evening. Welcome along to the show. If anyone sets eyes on John Aldridge on a bus heading back into town from Aintree, please put a comforting arm around him and guide him home to Gattaca or wherever he wants to go. Actually, he'll probably end up in town, won't he, Aldo, tonight?
Never mind. He won't be on the bus yet.
We've got two sober and level-headed gents in the studio tonight, Graham Sharp and Stephen Warnock. What a day for day one of Aintree. The weather didn't help, did it?
Not good at all, is it?
No? Have you done one of those, you two, you know, where you turn up at Aintree and then the heavens just open?
Doesn't make any difference to me. I don't see a horse.
You just stay inside the box all the time?
And watch it on the telly.
Stephen, you like a bit of Aintree?
I don't go. No. I'm not a gambler, not a horse racing man.
Did the team never go?
Not really, no.
No?
You'll always get a few people who'll look to go, but it's very difficult on a Thursday when you've got a game on a Saturday to go, because if you get spotted there, it's the wrong thing to do.
I'd be surprised if Liverpool lads aren't on...
Well, they'd have been on a plane, because they're in Southampton tomorrow.
No, but I'm saying on the Saturday.
They'll be back for it, won't they?
Yeah, I think one or two. I've seen... I think Charlie Adam was here a couple of years ago when he was at Liverpool.
That must have gone well.
Quincy Knight was in crutches.
So Kenny Dalglish was there today.
Was he?
Yeah, there were some famous faces. So,
in our day, we used to, because obviously the kickoffs were, if you were at home, it was a 12 o'clock kickoff, so you usually played the game and then jumped in the taxi and shot up to Aintree for the Grand National. So both Liverpool and Everton, depending on who was playing at home, had the opportunity to go after the game. They brought the kick-off early.
There were some very famous derbies played ahead of the Grand National, weren't there? 1976, I think.
Played before then,
was it? Sounded like a stato, but David Fairclough scores a goal, which is the winner in a 1-0, and that was an 11 o'clock kick-off on a Grand National day. So it always used to be the two together, but no longer. Never mind, anyway. Lovely to see you, Stephen.
Yeah.
I'm sure you want to wax lyrical about Andy Robertson later in the programme. You brought us some wonderful facts on fullbacks the last time, and Andy's been absolutely killer. And what's on your mind, Sharpie, as well, Everton-wise?
Nothing.
Big one with Arsenal, really, isn't it?
We've got big games coming up, Steve. As I said, Arsenal at home, United at home. Some really tough games, but games that you look forward to, not only as a player, as a spectator, so... Two wins in the trot, you look to make it three. Bring them on, watch them the other night. I thought, defensively, I look at the fullbacks and I think they're quite strong. I saw Everton, their wide players against West Ham, and West Ham are awful from wide positions. So I don't think Arsenal will be as open as what West Ham were. So I think it'll be a tighter game. But hopefully we can get the result.
Do they feel like a team to you, Arsenal, that are the third place team? Because they seem to have crept... into that position. I know it was jolted ever so slightly last night, but all of a sudden they are proper top form material, aren't they?
Yeah, I like them. I like what he's done at the club. He's not afraid to make big decisions. I think he's tactically very aware of what's going on. Not afraid to change his tactics during a game as well. And to come in and follow a man like Arsene Wenger, you look at when Moyes followed Fergie and they tried Van Gaal, they tried Mourinho, and it just hasn't worked for them along the way. It's not easy, as everyone thinks, just to suddenly go, right, you're the replacement for Arsene Wenger. I know Arsene Wenger's time was sort of coming to an end, but that was a huge, huge job to take. But he is the right man for it. I do believe that, and I think he's a very, very good manager.
Yeah, they've got better. As the season's progressed, they've got better. You know, again, it happens with managers. They come in and go, oh, he's not as good as what he was before and all this kind of, but he's proved... As Stephen says, he makes decisions as well. You know, and you have to do that as a manager. And I think they're playing for him now.
The one big thing you say for them is they have to break into the top four. If they don't, you can tell from January where they said, we've only got loan signings, we can only get players on loan. I mean, that's not good enough for Arsenal. You've got to be buying top players. And if they get into the Champions League, suddenly you can start attracting players coming into the club and he'll have a little bit more money to spend. And I think defensively, that's all they're looking for, isn't it? Players in the defensive areas, because attacking-wise, they're as good as anyone.
As to Tottenham, they have to be in the top four now. They spent £1 billion on a stadium. That's the way it works.
Yeah, I think
see
so.
They've made a world record profit of £113 million after tax. That's been announced today. So they're doing all right, but they have to be in the top four.
They've got to win things. Everybody's saying that. Everything's in place now. They've got a top-class manager. There was a possibility the manager might have moved on in the summer, but I think... He said that he's willing to stay there. They've got a stadium. Everything's in place. The only thing they need to do now is win a trophy. And I still think that finishing top four year in, year out is not good enough for Tottenham. They need to win a trophy. You know, whilst it's good and the Champions League's a big attraction, you have to win. You have to win something. And I think they have to do better, and certainly in the league, they've fallen away again this year, you know, injury to Kane or whatever. But I think in the years to come, they'll be expected to win something. They've got everything, all the tools, and got a new training ground, or upgraded the training ground. Everything's there for them now. It's up to them.
But you build a magnificent stadium, it doesn't mean you can build a team that wins things. Or does it?
Well, unless your owner's willing to put his hand in his pocket. Yeah. And that is, I think, what people, fans, have to understand is that's not Daniel Levy. He isn't the one who holds the money. He's the gatekeeper of the money, if you like. So it's up to him to go to the owner and try and convince him to release a little bit more money to spend in this magnificent stadium that they've got to improve them. The situation with Pochettino, would he have still been there if Solskjaer had done so well at United? So in a way, for Tottenham and for Tottenham fans, it's worked in their favour that Solskjaer's had such a good run, because it's took it out of their hands now. But he is going to have to win something eventually. And players like Christian Eriksen, Harry Kane, they're not going to be satisfied not winning things in their career. The only way Harry Kane will be satisfied to stay at Tottenham is if he wins things with England. And that might keep him at the club. The other thing that Tottenham fans have to sort of wonder is, do you sell your big players like a Harry Kane and a Christian Eriksen? You raise yourself £200-300 million, and then you try and build again and build a better team from them funds. But these are all little things and exciting times for Tottenham.
I was just wondering, they opened their new stadium as players. Would there be a bit of you in your head thinking, I've got to be the first person who scores in this stadium?
Yeah.
I want to be down in history. Yeah. I was thinking that. Yeah. Even as in your position, you would think, oh, I might have an extra pot shot on goal from 30 yards, because you never know.
I watched the game last night, and Van Aanholt, who plays at left-back for Palace, he went on this run, and I was thinking, I know what he's trying to do here. He's desperate to score, and I'd probably be the same in that position. But you could see Harry Kane was desperate to get a goal, to be the first one, and you can see what it meant to Son to get that goal as well. Mm.
Good that Son got it.
It is. Listen, at the end of the day, you still want your team to win, but if it happens to you, it's a massive bonus, and it's like, wow, you know, who scored the first goal in your team?
Yeah, it's always there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking, you know, the top six teams, so looking at how the season's gone so far, and if we associate this to Everton, has the gap widened or in any way stayed the same between the top six teams? So it's Manchester United at the moment in sixth, and Everton. Or do you feel this season has demonstrated top six a widening or not?
Top six are miles ahead of everybody else.
Has it got bigger? Because this is what Everton have to think about, isn't it, in the years that come.
But I'm just talking about Everton. I'm talking Wolves, who had a great season, really good season. A good result again the other night. Probably the best of the rest, I would say, at this moment in time. Whether they can do that, you know, season in, season out, remains to be seen. But I've said it time and time again in this show, the top six is miles ahead of anybody else. I think everybody raves about the Premier League being brilliant, and I think it's quite ordinary. I think the games are quite ordinary. I think the top six are ahead, and there's nobody at this moment in time, over a period of time, I think will get anywhere near them.
So I'm interested to see, with Wolves' spending prowess next season, another year in the Premier League, if they buy sensibly like they've bought year upon year since the new owners have taken charge, where they can get to. Leicester under Brendan Rodgers, with the squad that they've got, there's been discontent at Leicester since they won the league. There's not been a happy camp when Puel was there. It's not been good at all. Suddenly there's a feel-good factor around the place. And I think Everton's squad is more than capable of competing a lot better and higher next season, given another year and under Marco Silva, having a manager who's been at the club for a year, trying to instil his sort of values on the club and the way he wants to play. I think Everton will reap the rewards next season. I don't think you can judge him on the job this season.
On basis of this, so what I'm trying to get at is the gap.
I think they'll improve.
So you think they've narrowed that gap, maybe?
No, they've not now, but I think they will next season.
They will.
I think you've got to judge teams on what's happened this season as well. Losing managers, Wolves' first year in the Premier League, and I think next year it'll be a little bit different.
Look at the top three. They've kept the same manager for what, over 4 years or whatever kind of thing. So you've got stability there. Chelsea, up and down at the moment. With Sarri, does he stay, does he go, or whatever. Consistently changed it. Arsenal have changed it. Then he's done quite well. But it takes time. Klopp's, 4 years in?
Yeah.
You know, and Liverpool are reaping the benefits. Okay, last year as well. But this year, maybe more so. They've got to be given time. The boy at Wolverhampton Wanderers has done a great job. a fantastic job. The test for him will be next year, you know, when people have kind of sorted the way out they play and everything else, and then that'll be another test for them. So the Wolves and the Leicesters of this world, and Everton as well, I've got to improve, you know, because the six at the top, I take Manchester United into that as well, they'll improve, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. We need to keep on and hang on to their
coattails. But it's no coincidence that the top three have all kept their manager.
Yeah.
And actually every other team, right down to Bournemouth, you can't really say that about, can you? You'd have to go to 12th place.
Well, you look at
Bournemouth, wouldn't you?
You'd probably say the top four would be Arsenal in terms of keeping the manager for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Chelsea, who sacked managers right, left and centre.
Well, I mean, next year that's going to be different for them. If they lose Hazard...
Yeah.
Suddenly, I mean, the reason that they get into the top four every year is because they've got a world beater within the team. And that's, I mean, that's invaluable. Doesn't matter whether you change your manager all the time. If you've got someone of his quality constantly turning out them performances, then you stand a chance.
So you think maybe next season Everton could be in with a shout of a top six challenge?
But
I think they'll be closer to it. I'm not saying they'll definitely get there, but it's going to take time.
Otherwise, what's the point in football?
No, well, yeah, but
what's the point in the Premier League? Yeah.
well, for lots of teams like Palace and Newcastle, there isn't a point, but there is for Everton, surely.
It is, but I'm saying this is where everybody's worried about it's going to go to Super League, like the Champions League is now. So when you take the top three teams, say, from England, Spain, Germany, whatever, that's, people have said they're worried about that's where UEFA are going to go with this. But for me, I've said, the Premier League, with all the hype it gets and everything else, the quality isn't that great. The top six, take the top six away and one or two others under there. But you that come up from the bottom, Huddersfield, Fulham, Cardiff, Burnley, Bournemouth, I think, have done okay. Brighton, there's not a lot of quality. Newcastle, hit and miss. I think the top six teams are out in their own at this moment in time. And everybody is trying to play catch-up. But what you do with that is, the top six... inevitably will get better, you know. So how do you get into that top six? You have to spend a lot more money, as Stephen said. Do you have to be patient with the manager and say, right, this is where we want to go? This is the questions that
if Everton were to change the manager again, they'd fall down again. It wouldn't improve straight away. You might get a little bit of a kick, but you've got to get stability in a football club. It's like any work industry that you go into. You need a boss at the top who sets rules, sets his standards up, and then give him time to implement them. Otherwise, it's pointless.
Yeah. Leave Marco Silva there. Right, it's 6:42. Let's take some calls on the Radio City legends, Graham Sharp, Stephen Warnock. Tonight, we're going to start on the Liverpool side of things with Kev this evening. Evening, Kev.
Good evening, lad. How are you doing?
Kev.
Yeah. Now, I just want to talk about, obviously, Liverpool and the sort of the criticism Mo Salah's been getting from certain quarters, which I think is really, really unjust. You know what I mean? He's still a threat. Yeah, I know he hasn't scored for like, what, 8-9 games or something like that. But you know, every single striker from the year dot has gone through this. I remember Dalglish going through it. I remember Rush going through it. Sharpie, I'm sure you went through it. You know what I mean? And all it's going to take is just like a little tapping and his confidence go, yeah. You can see his confidence is lagging a bit. He's sort of maybe taking that extra second to play the ball, or he's taking that extra time to think, oh, should I run here? You know, last year, yeah, it was all free-flowing. But, you know, we had a more attacking midfield last season, especially when we had Coutinho there. You know, but like, Salah, he's on the end of the cross yesterday. Okay, Lloris cocked up, on Sunday, sorry. We all know he cocked up. How hell he never capped onto it is unbelievable. You know what I mean? But Salah was still on the end. He's still trying. He's still there. And as I said, you know, the criticism that he's been getting now, one season wonder this and give him a rest and all like that. We haven't got anyone to replace him, even if we wanted to give him a rest.
Stephen, over, you know, the top, I mean? or not?
No, I know you just said, is it over the top? I think when you look at Salah's performances, to do what he did last year was going to be a big ask. There's only Messi and Ronaldo who do it on a consistent level of being world-class, scoring 40 plus goals a season. To reach that level is inhumane at times. It's incredible the way they do it. What Salah does very, very well for me now, and what he's probably goes unnoticed, is he's taking defenders away from the likes of Mane and Firmino, and he's creating more gaps. And I think he's actually got more clever in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, understanding that he's actually doing that. I think there's also, I mean, Sharpie will know more than I do. There is, you can see are snatching his shots at the moment, where he's desperate to score a goal, because once you score one goal, you're back up and running and you're away. I think the football's the biggest the biggest thing in football is confidence. Mm. And once your confidence drops that little bit, suddenly you do start thinking about things. When your confidence is sky high, you can hit anything and it's going in the back of the net.
Kev, he's got 17 goals at the moment. You know, which is a good return. Don't get me wrong, but Stephen quite rightly said there as well. What he done last year was unbelievable. You know, now to live up to that again is going to be really difficult. And Stephen will tell you, he's a defender. When you play against him the next season, you already know about him, thinking, okay, I'll push him on his weaker foot, I'll do this. And they'll make special plans to deal with Salah. But what usually happens here is that other people benefit from that. You know, Mane will benefit from that. Firmino.
Mane's had a great season scoring, hasn't he? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Firmino scores as well, kind of thing. So, whilst he might not be hitting the heights that he done last year, I don't think it's time to criticise him. I think he's done decently. But listen, you know, football fans are demanding. But for me, and Stephen's the same, I think he's done a good job there. Yeah, there's been times when you think he should have done better, but hey-ho, that tells you that he's human after all.
He exposed the fact that he knows he's been criticised, because he did that interview with Jamie Carragher, didn't he, after the match, and he essentially said, well, no one's having a go at this other player in the league. Yeah. Whereas actually, I think what he should have done is just gone, oh, I'm happy with my form, I've got 17 goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he has made it publicly known that it bothers him, hasn't he?
And the best players will.
Yeah.
The best players, because they put that weight of expectation on their own shoulders. They know they're good enough to perform at that level. The other thing that we have to think of as well is Liverpool this season have been a completely different in the style of football that they've played. They're not gung-ho. They don't play the way that they did last year. There is more of a patient build-up at times. So he isn't going to get that speed of on the counter-attack that the way they used to play. Liverpool have changed the style, and that's probably affected him as well.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I didn't expect him to have another season like that. Last season was just phenomenal. It was a one-off. You know what I mean? It just clicked. It's one of those years that just clicked for him and clicked for Liverpool. You know, but as I said, like I play him all the time. I've got no criticism about him. But like three other Liverpool fans, sort of having a little puff and thinking, you know, why aren't you nicking? You know?
Kev, do you think a worry for you is if he, God forbid, he does get injured, that Liverpool have nobody really in the squad that can take his place? I know they've tried. Yes. Origi's come in and Shaqiri's kind of left in the bench, but you're looking, who is it really that could replace Mo Salah?
No one can replace him, is there? You know what I mean? Who would you replace him with in the Premiership?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Looking from the outside, I think they're really dependent on the front three of Salah, Sane, and Firmino, and I'm thinking, surely next year, you know, they'll look to strengthen in that position. You know, I think Yeah, go on.
To be honest, I think we need to strengthen in the midfield, because the midfield isn't chipping in with the goals this season. The midfield goals is absolutely appalling.
You have to think, though, they've still got Oxlade-Chamberlain to come back. Yeah. You've got Keita. I know Keita's not hit good form this season, but you've got to give him a chance next season to have his bedding in period. He's just not adapted at this moment. But next year, I think there'll be a period at the beginning where they might say, right, this is your opportunity.
Kev, thank you very much indeed. Some really good points there.
Cheers,
you mentioned the Ox. It's a year today since he scored that absolute belter against Man City. Do you remember it, Sharpie?
I do.
It was great, and we all celebrated it together a few days later.
Well, we didn't celebrate it, but you.
What a goal that was.
You've been in the pub buying drinks, with no chance, is there?
There's some great video footage of Pep Guardiola looking absolutely crushed by that game. It was fabulous, wasn't it?
Was there any footage of him in this year's game?
Oh, be quiet.
Was it not? I thought there might have been, though. He wasn't looking crushed in this year's picture.
Let's hope the Ox can come back and have an influence.
Oh, absolutely.
A good lad and a good player. 10 to 7. We'll take more of your calls next on the Radio City Legends with Graham Sharp and Stephen Warnock. Hi, Sharpie and Stephen Warnock in tonight. I'm Steve Hothersall, and Aldo's at the races, or he's probably left. if you spot him, send us a text. Tell us what he's up to.
Send us a picture.
Pictures, in this day and age. Photobomb him. Right, lots being written about Theo Walcott this one. I don't know whether you read some of the articles, Sharpies. This one from The Telegraph. Chris Bascom's written it. Theo Walcott faces a fight for his Everton future this summer. He's not had a great season, has he?
No.
The Merseyside club is pursuing its policy of constructing a younger squad. And he's the highest earner at Goodison Park on a salary in excess of £100,000 a week, which actually isn't really the issue. The issue is how well you're playing as a footballer, isn't it? He's found himself out of the side for three games, and Silva's favouring Bernard at the moment. Has he passed that point of... Well, he's not past the point of return, has he? But he's got to put in some significant performances now, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, if you're honest, it's been disappointing. You know, he came in under Allardyce. Allardyce signed him. I can't remember the fee. Was it 28 million or something? I'm not sure. But if I'm honest, I think Evertonians would have expected a lot more than what they've actually seen this year.
20 million.
20 million, sorry. So
4 goals from him this season.
Listen, you look at him and you're thinking, does this manager fancy him? Obviously, what you just said, he's preferring Bernard and other people ahead of him. So it's going to be a big summer. I said it all along, that Everton have got a big summer ahead of them, getting rid of the players that they don't necessarily want. It'll be interesting to see what Silva thinks of him. Richarlison played on the right last week and did really well against a poor West Ham team, don't get me wrong. But if you're looking at it, you think, yeah, he's struggling to get in the first team. Now, what does he want to do? You know, this is the thing, what does he want to do? Because I heard I read an article, when he was at Arsenal, seeing how he'd fallen out of love with football, you know, which I found really, really surprising, that Enby could fall out of love with football. But it's what he wants to do now. You know, how much does he want it? How much does he want to continue to be a Premier League player or a top player? Does he just say, well, I've had enough and move to the MLS and move to wherever he wants to move to? It's just how serious he wants it to be. I'd like to think that he wants to make a point and try to challenge to get into that first team on a regular basis. That's the kind of reaction you would want. But I think the summer is going to be very interesting, not just for Theo, but for a lot of players at Everton, ones that are coming back from loan. So, listen, the ball is firmly in his court.
Have you crossed paths with him, Stephen?
I've been in England squads with Theo. Yeah. He's a good character, nice guy. Yeah. And I agree with Sharpie. I think it's one of them now where people are questioning you, and you've got to fight back, and you've got to earn your place, and you've got to... Even at the age he's at, with what he's sort of, the club he's been at, Arsenal before Everton, he's got high standards. And when you come into a changing room and you've got someone of his ilk with high standards and you can pass that on to young players, sometimes to have someone around the changing room with that is hugely beneficial. Now, he's always wanted to be a striker, so you wonder, do you use him now as a sub-striker who comes on in games? Still fairly quick, isn't he? Mm. Still have an influence on a game. And maybe it's something that, with his age now, he uses his experience on the pitch to get himself in better positions, and you can use him as an impact player.
Right, that could be his role. Let's bring one of our callers into this conversation, because Gary wants to talk about the vision for next year. Evening to you, Gary.
Hi, lads. You okay?
Hi, Gary.
First of all, Gary, Theo Walcott, is he part of the future for next year for you?
Well, he hasn't sort of hit the ground running with us sort of the last sort of 10, 15 games, so I wouldn't think so. I think Marcel Brands will sort of have a big say in who we buy in our way forward. I think next season, I think he's probably looking at players that age between 20 and sort of 25, wanting to use us as a bit of a stepping stone to get to higher and better things, and hopefully drag us along that way. I think Marcel Brands has mentioned it was sort of, if we get a player, we need to sell on value for him rather than have players who have done it and coming over the other side and just want to, I mean, I don't know, Graham's just said there, about Theo falling out of football under grand a week. A bit of a funny one, that, you know.
But it can happen, so. Can't it?
No, but that's what I'm saying is that's what he said at Arsenal when things weren't going well at Arsenal. You know, and the interview he gave, it said he'd fallen out of love with, which I find astonishing. I honestly do, because I don't think I could ever fall out of, when I was playing, could ever fall out of love with football. Yeah, things didn't necessarily go your way. You know, you were dropped or something and you got angry and all that, but you never ever fell out of love with football. Imagine me coming into Everton and saying to Colin Harvey, my coach, tell you what, Cole, I've fallen out of love with football a little bit now.
I think he's been a bit naive saying that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I don't think he's actually meant he's fallen out of love with football. I think it's probably more, I'm frustrated at this moment in time. I'm struggling to find the enthusiasm to get where I want to be.
Possible. Possible.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you're young and you can just say the wrong thing and you don't actually mean it, but once you've said it, it's written down, suddenly people want to read it.
Gary, so what would you do next year coming in? We've got loads of ones coming back. We've said it, Vlasic, Besh, Morales, Ramirez. I think it's going to be a really difficult summer for us. I honestly do, in terms of, you know, you're talking about bringing people in. I think getting rid of people is where we're going to suffer. You know, and I think when you look at some of the prices we paid for players who are no longer part of the setup, it's getting rid of those players, which I think is going to prove difficult for us.
Oh, absolutely, Graham. I think that's what Marcel Brands will be looking at. You know, we have to look at that, finding that fine balance. You know, the players coming back, who we want to buy. You know, and how we do. And I think it is going to be a difficult summer. Now, the other night we played. I had a little bit of a theory on this. The other night we played West Ham on Saturday. I don't know whether you know, but Saturday night the weather was like a warm Saturday night. One of your t-shirts. And ironically enough, our best team players was Bernard, Gomez and Richarlison. No, we all played for, I thought, I wonder if that warm weather on Saturday night, because that was my theory, that we sort of all turned up. Then three, when I was watching them warming up, you know, they were sort of laughing and joking between each other and that, you know, their type of weather.
The warm weather?
I tell you what, Gary, we'll have to play in Brazil or something then. That may be seen better of us. But listen, I don't know. I just think, as I said, Gomez, we need to look at this, the permanent signing of him. And we're talking about signings and people coming in and how much money we've got to spend. I don't think he's going to throw an awful lot of money at it. But if we are, he's going to have to spend a lot of money on Gomez, you know, from Barcelona. The boy Zuma, I think, which it's a sad one. I think he'll go back to Chelsea. I would like to sign him on a permanent basis, but I don't think that's going to happen. So the ones that we want to keep are going to cost us a lot of money anyway. So I'm not sure if he's going to throw, you know, a lot of money at the transfer market. I think the most thing, what you'll have to do is get players off the wage structure to try and get people in. And I think that's where it's going to be difficult, because players hold all the aces at this moment in time in terms of contract and getting paid up and everything else and fees. So I think he's going to have to work hard in the summer, Marcel. He's used to it, don't get me wrong. But I just think that, you know, we'll get a clearer picture. But I wouldn't expect us to be splashing the cash.
I think there's also the other side of it from Mashuri, isn't there? That he's tried to throw money at it. It's not worked. And he will be in the back of his mind thinking, I can't do that again. I've got to do more sensible. And it might not be this summer that I can throw more money at it. It might be next summer or the summer after. But we're going to have to do it more cautiously. We're going to have to do our homework properly. We can't just look at the likes of Klaassen, who was sort of a one-season wonder, if you like, and go, oh, he's our man, we're having him. There's got to be more thought process behind it. And I think with Brands coming in, it looks like he is the man who's going to do that.
Gary wants some serious cash spent on massive heaters at Goodison Park just to make some of the lads feel at home. Well, Gary, sorry, the quality of your line's a bit poor, so we've had to just move on there.
Well, Stephen just said to me the weather's supposed to be quite good on Sunday, so we're in for a game.
Thank you, Gary. Let's move on to our next caller. We're talking Liverpool now with Sam and the title race. Evening, Sam.
Hi, mate. You okay?
Hello, pal. Hi, Stephen Warnock's here. What's your thoughts?
Hello, Steve. You okay?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Sam. You?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Just a thought, mate. Like I was saying before earlier about games tomorrow, I think that's going to be a lot tougher than some of the top league opposition, because Southampton are on a good run and are really playing well. This Hassan, I can't really pronounce his name.
Hasenhüttl. Yeah, I'm quite worried about the game. I think it's a massive challenge for us.
I think it's going to be a tougher challenge than the actual Chelsea at home game. I'm not really too concerned about Chelsea at home. I'm more concerned about tomorrow night's game.
Yeah, I mean, that's often the worry when you're a fan or a player, is that naturally you get up for the Chelsea and the Tottenham games because you know you're playing against top-class opposition. You've got to be on guard against your Harry Kanes, your Eriksons and your Hazards, if you like. But then come to Southampton and you're up against less opposition without being disrespectful to them. But that's a tough game. They're fighting for their lives. They've had a revival under Hasenhüttl, very similar to the way that Klopp tries to play his football, high pressing, good energy, and they create a great atmosphere at St Mary's. So it's not set in stone that the Liverpool are going to get the result they want, and they're going to have to work for it. But I think there's something within the players now, after getting that last minute goal against Tottenham, that they'll think that this is our opportunity now to get a result tomorrow night Manchester City playing in the FA Cup this weekend and putting the pressure back on City.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's what I mean. The pressure is going to be on City because they have got to win all of them. Like we have, we've got to win all our remaining games. But I said it before, I've been on the show before. Now, it showed last night with City. City have lost their top goal scorer, Sergio Aguero. Now, they can replace him with Gabriel Jesus. It's their depth in their squad. It's unbelievable. It's hard to put words to it, how good they are.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When the big thing for Manchester City, though, is in the Champions League, they've got to play Tottenham. So they're playing Tottenham three times because they've got them Champions League and they've got them in the Cup. Psychologically, that's very difficult as well to play a team because if you draw the first game or lose one of the games, then in your head, you're quite nervous about going into the other game.
They're going to beat them three times.
Who, Tottenham?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Do you think so?
No, I don't. But what I'm saying is in your head, you look at it and you think, you lose the first game, and it changes the whole dynamic of the three games
personally,
that you've got, although you draw them.
Looking at the Tottenham game, the way he plays on Sunday, first half, I thought we controlled the game. Second half, Pochettino made a tactical decision to stop our full-backs playing, because I don't know whether anyone noticed, but our playmates, more or less, on Sunday, was our full-backs.
Well, 68% of our attacks in the first half came down the sides.
So that's,
and then it dropped to 38% in the second half.
Go on, wax lyrical about the fullback, Stephen.
No, it's just,
come on, give
it's us just
the Andy Robertson.
He is
brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, he's superb, but it's testament to Pochettino's tactics. He was playing three at the back, and then he decided to change it to four at the back, and he sort of man-marked Trent and Robertson to a certain degree, and it stopped them, it slowed them down. But Klopp missed the trick as well. He didn't change his tactics.
Exactly.
And that was my worry.
What I was leading to was like, when your fullbacks have stopped playing, if they're your main playmakers in the first half, I think you've got to sort of look at your midfield then to bring the pushers on to step up their game. Now, I said it last time, I don't want to be too negative. I know we've only lost one game throughout the season, but them three central midfield players, I'm no disrespect to them at all, but I don't like it when they play together. Them three.
See, I do, and I know why he plays them to start, but I think once you get to a period of 55, 60 minutes, then you've got to implement someone else and bring someone off the bench and change it up then, because Liverpool went stagnant in the second half, whether it was the three in midfield or it was the tactics of Tottenham. But then Klopp had to change it. He had to do something. He got away with it at the weekend, Klopp.
Yeah, he did. He did. Now, that's what happens. Listen, as I say again, United have done it for years under Ferguson. They haven't played well and they've won games. That's what happens in a title race. You don't have to play well to win things. You know, this is what it's all about, being in the title race. But what I come back to is the midfield. We are lacking that creativity from the centre of the midfield, and I think a lot of people can see that. Yeah.
Is there an element of him playing that midfield because he thinks the fullbacks are essentially wingers?
Yeah.
So essentially, it's just covering. They're going to cover the spaces, aren't they?
It's the change.
Midfield.
That's the change from last season. Last season, you would have seen Henderson sitting, and you'd have seen Wijnaldum and Milner going as well. And you'd have seven in the box, whereas now, when one of the fullbacks go, that's Milner's job and it's Wijnaldum's job to cover that, or Henderson's. And they're filling them spaces, and that's essentially why you've got four at the back all the time and you're not getting counter-attacked, and that's why they're conceding so little goals. But, I mean, now, when you're in that situation you're in, it becomes it gets a bit nervy in the second half, and people are thinking, I don't really want to go because we've got a 1-0 lead. They get a little bit apprehensive. You put the handbrake on a little bit, and that's where sometimes when you bring a substitute onto the pitch, he doesn't have them inhibitions. He just thinks, I'm going for it. I'm going to play the way I need to play because I need to get into this team and affect the game.
Sam, thank you very much indeed. Good point. Just before we get to the break, obviously there was a great piece of luck for Liverpool, wasn't there?
Was there?
With that goal at the
game
weekend.
Is that?
I was just wondering, what's the biggest slice of luck that you ever had on a football field, Sharpie?
Come to me straight away. Obviously, there's been loads of kind of thing, but we played Aston Villa in the semi-final of the League Cup, and Kevin Richardson, who played then, had broken his wrist and he had like a kind of cast on his wrist, and there was a scramble in the box and we were defending, and Richards put his hand up and everybody could see because he had this cast and punched it off the line, and the referee never gave it, and we'd play on. So we said to Rich after the game, and listen, we got through to the final, said, listen, television wanted him to speak to him after the game. So we said, listen, whatever you do, don't go on that telly and say you handballed it. Right? Okay. Okay. He was nervous, kind of thing. Went on. And they said, Kevin, about the handball incident? He went, no, never. It wasn't me, never touched it. And then they played it back, and it
to
was
him.
The most blatant thing you've ever seen.
You all stood him up.
Yeah, we got away with that. Yeah, we got away with that night.
Fantastic. Stephen, have you got one or not?
My biggest slice of luck was my goal for Leeds, where I scored a free kick from about 40 yards and I got the biggest gust of wind ever.
That's the way it works. Play right, we'll do the quiz. Pens next. You've got Aldo's honour to uphold, and Sharpie hasn't won for ages. No pressure.
Thanks.
That's up next. We'll do pens in just a moment or two with Sharpie and Stephen Warnock. We were just talking about stadiums again off air. Obviously, it's the subject of choice at the moment. There's no name being given to White Hart Lane currently. It's not White Hart Lane, is it? So Spurs Stadium. So something might be announced. Maybe there should be a sponsorship thing involved in all that.
Why is it not called White Hart Lane anymore?
Or is it? I don't know.
No, I'm saying, why is it not?
Everything last night was just Spurs' new stadium.
And it was. Whereas they would have made a big deal of it, wouldn't they, if they knew the name?
Yeah. They'd probably call it the new lane, wouldn't they?
The new White Hart Lane?
The new lane, yeah, that's what I imagine we'd call it. It's still in the same place, isn't it?
I think a big money bid will come in, won't it? Like the Emirates, something big, a major sponsor will come in.
Off air before, we were talking about the fact that one of the biggest subjects of conversation was how you get your pint there, that it fills it from a glass upwards, from the bottom. Are you allowed to tell us about your conversation with one of the players or not?
Tom had dropped me, innit?
I know, yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're not.
It's fine. I interviewed Kieran Trippier, and I just said, are you looking forward to the new stadium? And the first thing he said was, they've got these pints that fill up from the bottom and you put the glass on the bar.
Why is that the most interesting thing?
I think everyone was made up, and I just hit him back and I just said, I've been at Anfield since the new main stand was built, so catch up.
Leaders.
So how does it work?
How does it work? Yeah. You just place your glass there and the beer comes in the bottom.
Yeah.
With a widget.
There's a widget on the bottom of the cup and you press it on.
Yeah.
And it fills
You'll
up
get it at Everson.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
2040.
We don't drink beer.
2040? You're being generous, aren't you?
We don't drink beer.
And just a further thing on stadiums, have you seen Real Madrid's remodel?
Mm.
And they don't even have to move out of it, do they?
So they're £450 million.
Yeah, they're going to rebuild it round the current state. It looks unbelievable, doesn't it?
They'll be able to beat Tottenham, won't it?
Space.
I think they're trying to keep up with Barcelona, because Barcelona are doing theirs now, aren't they? They're revamping the camp now. So,
right, let's get on with our quiz. It's pens. And we've got some great questions today. Christian's been working very hard. And you'll be pleased to know he didn't sleep in his car last night.
On three things I don't believe you. Yeah.
What? That he didn't sleep in his car?
That's one. And then the other two things you said, working really hard, I don't believe that.
All right.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of the good questions, won't we?
Who would like to go first? Stephen Warner.
Guess
right.
Steve. Three, please.
Number three, what was the score when Liverpool played Southampton at Anfield this season?
Oh, my God. I can't actually remember.
You prep for the game tomorrow.
No. 2-1.
Stephen, poor start.
Absolutely no idea.
It was 3-0.
3-0, there you go.
To Liverpool. Amazing how quickly they can go out the mind. Penalty miss.
People thinking this is easy.
It should be.
Is it not?
Two.
Number two, right. Liverpool signed a three times Champions League winner in 2005. Yeah? Who was that player? He'd won the Champions League three times. Stephen knows it.
I think so.
In what year?
2005.
I'm going for a big guess here, and it's Karl-Heinz Riedler.
It is one of those where you don't want to watch schoolboy football.
You should have known him.
Morientes?
Yeah, Fernando Morientes. Right, two misses, Stephen?
I'll go six.
Number six. Everton were beaten by Arsenal 2-0 earlier in the season. But who scored the first goal in the game?
Do you know it, Sharpie?
No.
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang is...
I think he got the second one. It was offside. It was Lacazette.
Yeah, it was Lacazette.
Yeah.
Yeah, first goal.
We're good at this, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Sharpie, come on, break the deadlock.
Five.
Number five. It's name the four teams.
Oh, come on. Get this every time.
Why'd you choose the number? Name the four teams in the 2007 Champions League semi-final. Name those four teams.
Barcelona.
Absolutely no idea.
AC Milan.
Liverpool. Bayern Munich.
Paris Saint-Germain.
No. Chelsea. No. And Manchester United.
Oh, wow.
Right, two questions left.
I thought you said that this quiz had got better.
Well, they're all factual questions.
Rubbish.
I'll go number one.
Number one, right. Name this mystery player. I made 55 Premiership appearances and I scored 16 goals. Scored my first Premiership goal against Crystal Palace in a 1-1 draw. Who is it?
What a question that is.
What teams?
What a question
Liverpool
that is.
Liverpool or Everton?
No, no, it could be anything.
Can't give you any more.
Mark Gonzalez. Oh, I don't know that.
Sharpie, any idea?
But hold on a minute. Is it an Everton or Liverpool player, or just a Premier League player?
Just listen, I made 55 Premiership appearances and I scored 16 goals. And I scored my first Premiership goal against Crystal Palace in a 1-1 draw.
It's not Mark Gonzalez because he didn't even score.
55 appearances?
Yeah.
No idea.
See, I was shocked to learn that you actually played in the Premiership.
I did.
55 Premiership appearances, 16 goals. You absolute numpty, Graham Sharp. These are your stats and you don't even know them. There you go. Right.
What number was
Stephen,
that?
Stephen, you just should have thought, why are we asking such a random question?
A stupid question, yeah.
You see, I predate you. I think you're much earlier than that.
No, but you should have said... But he didn't know if it was Liverpool or Everton. Stephen rightly thought it would be a Merseyside club's question.
And it was.
Well, it was. It was you.
Stupid question.
Okay.
Let Amy do the questions next.
All right.
Right, I'll go
got
four.
One left, then. It's song and artist time. Song and artist, are you ready?
What was that one you just had? Was that number one?
One.
Right, here we go. Right. So one more time. Song and artist.
Prince. $19.99.
So you've gone for Prince and
$19.99. Yeah. Those questions are terrible.
Can't win. Shocking.
Do you know Steve is devastated to lose this quiz?
I am. Not think I've won one yet. I just knew this morning when I text Christian when he texts me, can you fill in for Aldo? And I thought, God, I've got to do that quiz again. I know it's going to be shocking.
See if you'd asked him for the answers, we'd have given them to you.
Mm. Oh, come on.
He does, he gives them to Aldo.
Sour grapes. That's Graham Sharp, 21, John Aldridge, / Stephen Warnock, / Dominic Matteo, 24. Yeah. So the boys are doing all right at the moment. Collective brain power against you, Sharp. But those were your Premier League stats with Oldham anyway, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's squeeze another let's squeeze another caller in before the end of the show. Let's talk Everton with Fakhrul. Evening to you, Fakhrul.
Hello there, guys. How are you doing? You okay?
How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Good to speak to an Everton legend. Liverpool legend there as well, Stephen and Graham.
Cheers.
Thank you, guys.
Fakhrul,
Yeah, thank you. Just going to talk. I was on a couple of months back, guys, about Everton. At the time, it was the height of when Marco Silva was under a bit of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to say that we've got Arsenal this weekend, and I think we're entering that game with a lot more confidence after a decent run in the last five games.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be tough. We're probably going to concede when you think about the players they've got. But I think after the two results recently against Chelsea and the last game against West Ham, I think we can go into that game with a lot more confidence than maybe we would have done maybe a month, two months back. At the time when I spoke to you guys, I was first on four at the time, we spoke about Marco Silva and we mm-hmm. spoke about how Everton can't keep chopping and changing managers. We have to find a manager to stick with him, given a couple of transfer windows. And myself and my son went to the Chelsea game, and the first half was, honestly, how we went 4-0 down, I'm not sure, but that second half showed everything that we wanted from Everton's team. We're aggressive, we're pushing on, we're attacking droves, and I think that after that game and the West Ham game, I thought was the best performance I've seen under Marco Silva. Yeah. West Ham weren't great, I'm sure you'd agree, but at the same time, I think we made them look bad as well. We're attacking in droves. I think we're pushing forward, we're aggressive, we're on the front foot. I think Andre Gomez coming back to form, I think has been a big plus, really, really big plus. I think it reminds me of Andre Pirlo, in that he always seems to have that extra second on the ball.
That's quite an honour, an Andre Pirlo performance.
Listen, Fakrul, I agree with you. I think the boy Gomez is a very talented footballer, Didn't work for him at Barcelona. He got a little bit of criticism and, found it hard. I would try and get him on board, sign him permanently. Listen, this weekend will be a lot harder than what West Ham was. You were right, West Ham were poor, but you can only beat what's in front of you, as the old saying goes. But I think defensively, Arsenal are looking a lot stronger. I don't think we'll get as much joy as we did against West Ham, but I think what we've got to do is get everybody up for the game. From the fans, you talked about the Chelsea game, and you talk about going to West Ham. Once Everton fans see their team having a right good go, and I think we've got to do that. I don't think we can stand back and watch Arsenal dictate play. We've got to get in their faces and make it difficult for them. And listen, at Goodison, it's important, Man United coming up as well, that everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet. So it'll be interesting. I think the manager won't make many changes. I think everybody's doing okay at the moment. When you think of the result at Newcastle, that was a gutter kind of thing, because we should have got 3 points there as well. And I think slowly but surely, and listen, there's still a long way to go, but I think he's got a lot of the critics off his back, Marco Silva, now, and hopefully we can finish the season well and look forward to next season, as Stephen said and alluded to in the first caller.
Can I just ask you one question, Graham?
Yeah.
The one thing that I think we missed against West Ham was a striker. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I think he's coming on in Bundle's movement, fantastic, but he's not a clinical finisher.
Mm-hmm.
I was suggesting that he got a lot of criticism when he was there, but Lukaku, if he's not the first choice striker at United next season, I think Rashford seems to be Solskjaer's.
Yeah.
I'd make a little bid for him, even on loan, just to say come back, get some playing time, because I'm not sure that he's one that would like to sit on the bench. I think he'd like to be the main man.
Would you go back there, Sharpie?
I think it's a difficult one. Listen, Dominic Calvert-Lewin for me is a young lad, and he's got all the attributes. He's got more attributes to his game than what Lukaku's got. Lukaku's a better finisher all day long and a better goal scorer all day long. But hopefully Dominic will find that, although Lukaku's only young as well. But Dominic gives you more in terms of his stretches, teams. He'll run in behind, he'll look to go down the channel. His touch is good when the ball comes up to him. Aerially, he's good as well. So Dominic's got all the attributes that you want. Lukaku, for me, was great for us. And, I was sad to see him go, because it took a lot of goals out of the team. But I'm not sure if that would work. I honestly don't know.
Fakrul, thank you. We have to go. We're going to finish the show. Quickie then, Liverpool at Southampton tomorrow night. A little bit nervous about that one, Stephen?
I am nervous. I think it'll be a very, very tough game. I still think we'll get over the line. Hopefully it'll be the fourth keeper in a row that helps us out. But... yeah, who knows? But I still think Liverpool will be strong enough.
A little bit of a helping hand. Sharpie, thank you very much indeed. Good luck to the Blues as well on Sunday. Radio City Legends back on Monday.